episode 23 of the D1 Softball Podcast. I'm Tara Henry, joined by Rhiannon Potke. Rhi, how are you doing?
Doing great. We're a week closer to softball. Can't wait to actually have a game. I'm so excited. We're seeing schedules dropping, big announcements. Can't wait till we see that first pitch thrown and we can get into it because we got some really good games on tap.
Yeah, big announcement this week. We announced Graham Hayes will be joining the D1 softball staff. Super excited to have him on board. Decades of experience and just love the way he writes, and super excited to have him back in the softball world.
Yeah, it was obviously a big hit for us on social media once we announced that, because everyone knows how good he is. I've had the pleasure of covering, you know, softball, women's basketball, women's soccer with Graham over the years, and he's just one of the best in the business. Really excited to be a teammate of his. Great free agent signing for us.
Yeah, so like, subscribe. We've got Graham now on the team, and schedules are finally dropping in the Pac-12 this week. So stay tuned. We hear UCLA is dropping its schedule. And some other Pac-12 schools. With that said, we've got just a great show for you this week. Rhi, who do we have with us joining the D1 Softball Podcast?
Yeah, well, we've been dropping, you know, obviously a lot of the season, you know, the conference previews and everything, but we needed to bring in the experts to really dial it down. So we had this is going to be kind of a season over preview. So we're going to be blessed to be joined by there's nobody better than ESPN's Amanda Scarborough and Michelle Smith. When you want to talk softball, everyone knows that those are the two you go to. So they were—they took a lot of time out of their day to go over all the Power Five conferences with us, what they're excited about with the season, and it's just a really, really packed show. It's going to be a good one. I think you're going to want to make some time away from your day to listen. If you want to be ready for softball to start, keep this podcast, and you'll learn almost everything about each conference.
Well.
And we are joined by the great ESPN analyst Amanda Scarborough and Michelle Smith, two of the all-time great pitchers in the college game. D1 softball would have written a lot about them if they were still in their playing days, and now we just love to have them on for their expertise. So this is our kind of our season preview. I mean, we've had a lot of content on the site, so we figured the podcast, we'll kind of just condense it and get some expert opinion on a season that will be like none other, coming off a season that was like none other. Fingers crossed that we can make it to Oklahoma City this year and all by that point collect and get together and celebrate softball. That's the goal. We can all be in one place. But thank you both for joining us on the D1 Softball Podcast.
Yeah, excited to be here. Always excited to talk about softball. So this is fabulous.
Yeah, this will be a good warm-up for next weekend. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, on that note, Amanda, next week, and I'm sure you've been studying up and everyone's trying to get caught up on what to expect this year. There's a lot more because there's a lot more players and a lot more elements involved. Has anything jumped out to you in terms of just, I mean, we all know COVID's going to be something, but when you're studying this and is there an overriding theme that gets to you when you've been doing your research about this upcoming season?
Yeah, you know, I feel like what sticks out to me right now is I don't think the coaches know a lot about their team chemistry and their team culture. I know that a lot of coaches all across the country really use the fall and early January to build up their team and to learn about each other. And so because of COVID, teams haven't gotten to spend as much time together as they would have on the field, off the field, and being able to get to know each other. So I'm interested of how that's going to affect the talent, how that's going to affect really good teams working together. And if some teams if there's going to be some parity because of that, like we saw at the beginning of last season.
Yeah. And Amanda, just to kind of follow up on your points there, I think this is going to be an interesting year for coaches on how they coach their team, but more importantly, how they manage their team, because all of a sudden you've got squads that are 30 players deep. Well, how do you keep everybody happy? It's hard enough to do that when you have 18 to 20 athletes on the team. So I think that's going to be one. I think the other is, how do you manage your new kids coming in, the freshmen? Are we going to see more red shirts in our game, where in the past we really haven't seen that quite often? So that's going to be a big decision for coaching staffs as well. And I think the third thing that's going to be super interesting at the start of the season are the nerves. There are a lot of athletes who have not played in a competitive environment for a year. I mean, think about that, or close to a year. So if you didn't play summer ball, and you maybe got a couple of fall games sprinkled in, when a big time game is, I mean, there's going to be a lot of chest, you know, thumping and butterflies in the stomach. And I think it's going to be interesting who is able to handle the nerves early on in the season.
Yeah. And those are all key points. I think in our fall reports, when we did that, a lot of coaches talked about each thing you guys brought up. They're kind of the same way, like wondering how that, you know, how it's going to affect things. And all those points were ones that some coaches more than others were thinking of. And it's going to be, this is going to be a great season just to watch. And so many variables are going to be in there to like figure out. I think it's going to be hard to judge teams right away. You're going to have to wait a lot longer to judge. And we can't dance around as much as we want to. We've seen the impact it's had on college football. And right now the disaster that is college basketball, trying to get, you know, play a season, although that is an indoor sport, which are the sport of softball benefits from being outdoor. We can't predict it. Everything's fluid. We've used that language so much time, but how do you guys see, Michelle, especially, how do you see the impact of COVID on the season? What are you getting ready for as an analyst? What are you like hearing from coaches, how that might impact the season?
Well, I think it's like any athlete, any high level coach, you tell your kids to expect the unexpected and just be ready for anything. And so I think this is going to be a great year on teaching young athletes that, you know, a lot of times we like to be very precise and dig in and know exactly how things are going to work out. But that will not be this year. It certainly wasn't last year in 2020. So 2021 is going to be a challenge, I think, mentally, emotionally. But I think we're going to have some interruption, and that's to be expected. And hopefully it won't be as much as basketball, as you mentioned. But I think that a lot of these young athletes need to be prepared for times when they might be sitting out for 2 weeks, and it could be very disappointing for them.
Yeah. And the part too, Michelle, like all these athletes are just so isolated. You know, their coaches are harping to them not to go out, not to be with their friends, to remember the bigger picture of their team. So it's hard because, yeah, you for sure have that flexibility, and we're kind of expecting the unexpected for this season. But at the same time, we have to remember that these athletes, like, they are college athletes, and they're used to going to class and going out with their friends and going to catch a movie or going to dinner. And they've had so much taken away from them and had to sacrifice so much. So yeah, they're definitely going to be excited to be out on the field, and they're going to want to stay COVID free and sacrifice even more for this season so that they don't have to miss any games, which is challenging again. It's really hard for everybody.
Given, you know, we were talking about, Michelle, you mentioned it, and it's something that we've, you know, a lot of coaches have mentioned. If, you know, for the first few weeks, we know at least COVID is still going to be ever present. And we've seen this, the numbers are starting to come down a little bit, but that roster size may really come in handy on the other hand, you know, at the beginning for the depth. Any other thoughts on the roster? Because obviously if you have like a, you know, contact tracing and you wipes out your whole pitching staff, having eight, like some teams do, might really all of a sudden come in handy. Any thoughts on how the increased roster size actually, you know, could play into that whole COVID scenario? Or just, you kind of already mentioned the chemistry issue and how to keep players happy, but any other thoughts on the depth of the teams we're seeing this year?
Yeah, I think the depth of the teams are going to be, as you said, it's going to be something you have to juggle. And it's also in many cases for teams that do unfortunately have some infections, it's going to be an asset for them. But I think what coaches will start to do is be super creative and say, okay, here's my team, it's A, B, and C, not based on talent, but just so that you're limiting your liability or exposure of players with each other. So there isn't that cross-contamination, like, as you mentioned, read that the whole pitching staff all of a sudden now test positive for COVID, and then you're trying to bring an outfielder in to pitch a game for you. That could be troublesome. So I think there's going to be a lot of stuff that and best practices that coaches will probably share back and forth, or will see and then implement with their own programs. But I think I'm going to have a whole page in my OneNote section of my computer that's going to be the unexpected. Wow, I never thought of this. You know, to keep kind of notes as the season goes on to keep track of all this.
Well, those big roster size, like, yes, they are a challenge, but they also could be a blessing. You know, if some players had to stay home and couldn't travel and they're limited to the contact tracing, so then they could potentially play. So we still don't know. I mean, we have no idea what it's going to be like to have 30, 35 on a roster. I feel like we're going to learn a lot about how coaches handle that, and about how, because of the increased roster size, COVID does or doesn't affect entire teams and how many games have to get canceled because of it.
Yeah, it's all fun to just talk about now, right? In the abstract, and but there definitely is going to be some need for it. We know that there no team's going to be. I mean, there's going to be teams that are going to be hit by it. Some teams already have been, you know, in terms of the fall and stuff. But so let's dig down. We're going to get really specific now into all the Power Five conferences. Let's start with the mighty Pac-12, our number one team, UCLA. You know, it's just such a shame when you get two Olympians coming back on your roster after you're already ranked number one without them. Such a tough thing to deal with. So, Amanda, let's start with you. The obvious, you know, for that, just the teams you expect out of that conference to contend. Who are the – I probably spoiled one of them for you, but that was kind of the obvious. But teams you expect to contend.
Yeah, I definitely think it's going to be UCLA, Washington thrown in there as well. And Arizona, I think that they're going to be able to hit the ball. I think their pitching is a little bit of a question mark. And I think that Oregon is going to make some noise, to be honest. They were a team that was knocking on the door last year, the top 10, and looked really strong. Like, I was excited to see how Oregon was going to play last year in Pac-12s. So, I don't know. I think those teams will be at the top, but I'm really interested, you guys, to see what we see out of Oregon and Jordan Dale and Brooke Yanez in the circle. And Rachel Sid had such a great year last year at the plate. So I'm really curious to see how they continue to grow. Michelle, what do you think about the Pac-12?
Yeah, I think Pac-12 obviously is UCLA, Washington, Arizona. For me, Oregon is a question because last year they were very strong, but their strength of schedule early in the season to me wasn't where it needed to be. So I think once they get tested, we'll know a little bit more, as you mentioned, about them, Amanda. I'm interested in Arizona. I mean, think about Jesse Harper and the home run,
Chase
record that she'll be going over. Thank you, Chase. And then, and we were talking about it last year because Deja Milipola was not with the team and that she wasn't going to be protected, but now she's back. So how does that play in as well? So it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to look at that. And then do we always have the asterisk because the home run she did hit in 2020 count? So I know Lauren Chamberlain's not too happy about that, but that is going to be very interesting. So, but you know, back to the Pac-12, they're stacked, they're loaded. I think it's going to be fun to watch them this year.
Can you guys, how about a player to watch from the pack that you're really, it's going to jump out to you? How about Amanda? What's a player to watch that you want to see?
Yeah, I'm going to give Arizona State a little bit of love because we didn't talk about them. And, you know, they're a team that is from the pack that has won, you know, recently some national championships and been in the World Series. So I'm going to go to Arizona State with Kendra Hackbarth and also, you know, her twin sister, Maddie Hackbarth, too, who can swing the bat really well. So they stick out to me. They're two different types of players, but the Hackbarth twins, can I do players? You know how I just like to.
Oh, you can do as much as you want. You know,
I'm going to do them over at Arizona State. They have that new hitting coach, Jimmy Kaleida. Shout out to Jimmy. And I want to see what they do.
Yeah, I think those are great choices. I real quick would like to say just basically Rachel Garcia and Bubba Nichols, because I'm curious how, talk about a yo-yo, you know, they're with the Olympic team, then they're no Olympics. Now they're back with their college teams. Well, you can stay with your college team this year, but you're still going to have that, you know, thought of, okay, Olympics right after your collegiate season. So I think those two athletes, it's going to be interesting to see how they do. And I know that, you know, Rachel had some, I think she had some medical stuff over the last year, and we'll see how she recovers from all of that. So it's going to be a super interesting year for both of them.
Yeah. When I talked, I don't know, maybe she was throwing me under the bus, but talking to Kelly, she said that Rachel came back like stronger than she's ever seen her. Like she's just like right now. So who knows, maybe that, you know, I don't know if she's just trying to like sandbag it a little bit, but to make people think that, but she said that she's never seen her like in better shape, which is kind of scary, to be honest.
Yeah.
On that note, maybe you'll go a different way and you can always tweak it when I ask this, but best pitcher, since you guys are pitching, we're going to ask every time because you guys are the experts at pitching. Best pitcher out of that conference, Michelle.
You know, everyone's going to be talking about, you know, Garcia, but Foramo, I mean, she was outstanding last year. So, I mean, Gabby Plain, you know, that's hard. That's a tough squad. Can we say top five? How about that? What do you think?
Michelle, We haven't been together in a year and we literally think the same. Like I have on my paper, Megan Faramo, like written as, and two, maybe not the best, but to me, that was a picture I wanted to watch because of how much she grew last year and how just fierce she was in the circle. Like she really stepped up last year knowing that Rachel Garcia wasn't there. And I think she'll still be on an upward trajectory. It's always a hard word to say.
Yeah. Said it well, that was good. Trajectory is very hard to say. Let's move on to the next, you know, these two conferences always kind of have to, you know, it means more Pac-12. We have more titles. It's always going back and forth. SEC, teams you expect to contend out of the SEC, Amanda.
Oh, okay. So I think, you know, Florida and Alabama are the regulars. How many years in a row now have they won every SEC regulars? Not every, you know, from the beginning, but the past 10, 11 years, I think they've won it every time. All these stats are just like floating in my head right now. And I can't really remember, and we'll get it figured out before the first TV game. Right, Michelle?
Yes.
But another team to watch in the SEC is LSU. They really got my attention last year, and LSU had one of the best, if not the best, pitching staffs last year. They swung the bat. They had a lot of youth on their team. So now all those young players have that extra year to have gotten better and developed. And I think that LSU could be a team that maybe sweeps in on Florida and Alabama. What about you, Michelle?
Absolutely. I'm right there with you, Amanda. Bama, Florida. I think, you know, the question for Bama is how does Montana Fouts come back? She struggled a little bit with her control, but I know she's worked very, very hard through the end of last spring after the season was over and through this fall, really working on her pitches and getting back to being able to spot and hit her corners. LSU, it's that pitching staff. I mean, Beth Tarina just does a really good job of getting a complete team. Her defense is outstanding behind a really good pitching staff, and they put runs up on the board. And, you know, that's the picture of a complete team. I think you cannot count out the UGAs, the Tennessees, who stubbed their toe a little bit last year. But now for some teams, they're probably like, whew, I'm glad 2020 was canceled. You know, and there's other teams that are like, oh, man, we were having our best year yet. And so it will be interesting. But I think the SEC is really going to be strong all the way through the entire conference.
Do you guys see a potential sleeper team in the SEC? There's a lot of those down, like you said, midway to bottom, one that maybe might not win the title, but you're interested to see how high they can climb this year?
Missouri. I think Missouri's got a ton of potential. I think a lot of it too is that it's that X factor of how are the rosters managed? Is that large group of a ton of talent? How are all those young ladies going to work together when maybe some folks aren't getting the ABs they want? So I would say my sleepers are probably going to be Missouri, UGA, and then you can never count out the weeklies in Tennessee.
Yeah. And my sleeper is going to be Arkansas. I feel like Courtney Dyfel has really developed that team and her own culture of being there for several years now, but Mary Half and Autumn Storm's in the circle for them. I like them. I feel like they really started out last season really strong, and I think that they're going to continue to build on it.
How about a player to watch, Michelle, in the SEC, one for any reason?
I'm very interested in Montana Fouts and seeing, can she get back to that ability that she had in her freshman year? I think she walked her first batter in her like 31st or 32nd inning as a freshman. That was unbelievable. So for me, it's definitely going to be Montana Fouts, seeing if she can get back and just be in that monster mode.
Man, it really is hard to pick just one, huh? You know who turned my head last year? I think that's the second time I've said that, but Taylor Pleasance, like the shortstop for LSU. She was a freshman. She has this beautiful left-handed swing. She has this tall, long body as she covers so much ground. Like I just was amazed by watching her play last year. She's super athletic. And then one more is Skylar Wallace. Going from Alabama to Florida, what spot does she find on that team? Because she's super versatile. I remember Hannah Adams is at second base, and so we've seen Skylar Wallace at second. Where does she fit into that Florida team? So that's something that I want to see, you know, how she plugs in there.
All right, Michelle, you've mentioned Fouts, but how about best pitcher in the SEC, or one that you expect to really be rise up this year, or has already, and just want to see her continue?
Well, I think Lexi Kilfoyle, I think, is another one of those names that could just come out and be stellar as well, especially when you have the 1-2 punch of Montana Fouts with her. So I think, and then I would also say the entire LSU staff, because if you have a team that hits the rise ball, you've got all these drop ball pitchers. If you have, you know, I mean, Beth Tarina has the ability to pick apart offenses because her pitching staff is just so good. 1-5.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm going to go on a limb here and give the Mississippi State pitchers a little bit of love. I was looking at last year's stats, and granted, I know, Michelle, you've talked about strength of schedule with some of these teams, and that for sure plays a part in it. But 3 of their pitchers were like in the top 10 in ERA. So, yep. I mean, if it was 1, I'd be like, okay, well, you know, maybe she got a little bit lucky. But I want to believe in somebody like Emily Williams, Alyssa Loza, and Annie Willis, who they're upperclassmen. Like maybe they're a big turning point for Mississippi State. And maybe they're a team that we should be saying is a sleeper team because of a solid staff that they have with experience. So I don't know. I want to give them a little bit of love because I saw those. I was like, oh my gosh, like, wow, what a staff that they had. So yeah.
Yeah, that was the hardest part, especially when we were, you know, when we pored over these rankings for hours and hours, is just knowing that conference wasn't played. You really, sometimes the record can be a little bit inflated, whether they were playing on the road, at home, you know, you're kind of trying to weigh that with some of the teams that played like Alabama when they played a killer schedule, like non-conference. So that's going to be interesting to see. I hope we make it through this year so we can actually, you know, get a more equalized, I guess is the best term, you know, in terms of just seeing how. Let's move on to the Big 12. How about the teams you expect to contend in the Big 12, Amanda? Who do you think will be up there?
I think Oklahoma and Oklahoma State for sure. And I think that Miranda Ellis not being with Texas is going to be a really big blow to them. I mean, I still think that they're super strong, but when I really think about who realistically can win the Big 12, I can't not think about how Ellis may hurt Texas, not being there may hurt Texas's chance. So Oklahoma State with all their transfers and what Kenny Gajewski has done, they just keep getting better and better, stronger and stronger. He keeps adding so much depth to that team. And Oklahoma, that, you know, they added some really great freshmen, and Patty Gasso has just raved about their offense. So I'm going to the state of Oklahoma thinking that the Big 12 championship might be with one of those teams, which I know that Michelle's happy to hear. Oklahoma State love.
Exactly. So I can be a little bit of a homer on this one and give Oklahoma State some love. Yeah, Kenny Gajewski has just done a great job with them. Carrie Eberle is in the circle, just fifth year senior, grad student, just great mentality. That's just a really good team with a couple of transfers from UGA. I mean, just experience, right? That's a team that's very loaded. Oklahoma, you have to go to G. Juarez, Nicole Mendez. They've just the athletes that roll off your tongue when you're looking at Oklahoma is it's about like the last 10 years, which is why they've dominated. You know, they just have that stud lineup. But I think the big question, as you mentioned, Amanda, is really going to be Texas. How are they going to do? How's Shaylin O'Leary going to do, knowing that she's going to probably be the ace now because Miranda Ellis is no longer in the circle? So it's going to be an interesting Big 12. I think that Baylor is another team that you can't count out because they always find a way to get right in the mix and kind of, you know, knock on the door just enough or upset some teams through the season. So I think the Big 12 is going to be strong again, as usual.
Well, actually, before we even ask, Baylor was going to be my sleeper team.
You transitioned beautifully with this.
There you go.
Perfect. But they have Gia Radoni. And you mentioned G. Juarez being a fifth year senior, but and it all starts to blend together. But Gia Radoni is a
senior now.
Yeah, six.
She's been around for a while, you know, like she's been around, and she came off a knee injury that she missed all the 2019 season, came back in 2020 last year and started out really strong. And so she's a really big key for them. They're always really competitive. And so she's 23, 24. I mean, she's going to be much older than a lot of the players that she's facing. And she's somebody who wants the ball. She is a really, really good competitor. And she's the type of pitcher that could be anybody on any given day.
Yep. Yeah, I know when we've spoke, I think it's been the last two seasons, Amanda, you're like, is Gia Radoni back? Like, this is like the third season you've asked that.
She's been around. When you're a senior, it feels like you're like 45, you know, yeah. Like it's like been around forever.
Yeah. How about a player to watch, Michelle? Who are you maybe looking for as just one player you're really just interested in for whatever reason it may be?
I'm going to go with Nicole Mendez and see how she does this year. I think she's just a lot of fun, a lot of energy. I love that what she brings to the lineup for Patty Gasso and company.
Yeah. And I'm going to go with Lauren Burke from Texas. She had a strong year last year at the plate, like hit over 400, had a ton of RBIs. And then I saw them in the fall and she looked like she had picked up where she left off. So she's going to be an important player for them too, to generate some offense, and one that I don't think a lot of people talk about, but she, I think, deserves some attention because she did, she's really turned it on offensively.
Yeah. And I think another one that maybe we have to throw out there is Molly Jacobson, who transferred from Ole Miss to Texas. I think that kind of in the mix is going to help out a lot with O'Leary. So, and you can never count out Mike White, because, you know, he's not only has one of the best accents of the game, I mean, he's one of the best pitching coaches in the game. So if there's anyone that can formulate a plan for his pitching staff and the kids in the circle, it's going to be him.
So how about the best pitcher out of that conference? Who do you guys think? I mean, we've mentioned a few already, but who do you think is going to rise to the top?
I like Carrie Eberle, Michelle. Ah! I really like her. And look, G. Juarez is really good, but Carrie Eberle, I mean, the fact that Kenny Gajewski said she has the biggest guts you've ever seen, I get goosebumps. Like, if a coach ever said that about me, I would be what a compliment, you know? And so if her head coach is saying that about her, and she threw the way that she did last year at the beginning of the year, her just like a minuscule ERA, so small. Like I can't wait to see how she does. And if she kind of rises above as maybe the pitcher, not especially the Elish is not there.
Yeah, I agree. I think she's just nasty. I mean, when you sit behind the dish and you watch her ball just kind of floats and dances, and she's not going to throw it past you. She's got good velocity, but you know, she's not going to blow it past you like a lot of other pitchers do, but she will definitely spin it past you. That's for sure.
All right, let's get to the Big Ten now. Teams you expect to contend, Amanda, in the Big Ten conference, which is now member playing conference only schedule. So they're going to be the one conference that for sure we know is going to be a little different. Although that's still, who knows, they could change their mind, as we saw with football, like the day before the season, they could change. So we don't know. But as of this point, Big Ten, what are you looking
for? Be flexible, Ree. You know, I would say it's 2020, but it's not anymore. It's 2021. We still have to be flexible. The teams in the Big Ten, I would say Michigan, Minnesota, Northwestern. I know that Wisconsin lost a lot, and I feel like Wisconsin was a team that was making some noise in the Big Ten, but I'm going to go to Michigan, Minnesota, and Northwestern. I think those are the three teams that will be contending.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that's a surprise at all. I think that their schedule, you know, plays a big part of it. For me, the question with Northwestern is Williams. You know, how does that lefty look in the circle? She had that incredible freshman year, so I'm excited to see how Danielle Williams does for Northwestern.
How about a player you guys want to watch out of that conference?
I go to Minnesota with Natalie Den Hartog. She has a really big swing. And if Minnesota, I feel like, wants to be a team that contends for a Big Ten championship, they're going to need her. And she can hit the ball really hard, really far. So she's somebody that I'm going to have my attention on.
Good analysis. I love that she can hit the ball really hard. Like, that's really hard. Best analysis ever. When it's that simple, just keep it that simple, man. How about you, Michelle?
Yeah. Where to watch?
Yeah, I'm going to go back again to Williams, as I stated, because I think that Northwestern is a team that plays well when they're pitchers. And I know this is like a duh, no brainer, but they're the type of team that when they're confident in their pitcher in the circle and their pitchers are doing well, I think it completely changes their game, because I don't see them as, you know, the type of team that's going to average 8 or 10 runs a game. So when you have confidence in your staff and you know that they're going to limit the amount of runs your opponent's putting up on the board, I think it changes the whole mentality of the defense, of the offense, of everybody. So I think that is going to be huge for them. And I think they struggled a little bit last year in 2020. I think they turned that around in 2021.
Yeah, I was fascinated when I heard that she was the first lefty in program history under that coaching staff, like, you know, in 20 something, they never had a left-hander till her, it's crazy to think that long, you know, like over 20 years. And that was she's their first left-hander that they recruited. Just kind of nuts. And that was an interesting fact I learned. So how about, speaking of pitchers, or Amanda, did you How about with you, the best pitcher you think in the conference, Big Ten?
Yeah, one that I'm for sure going to be watching out for is Megan Bobian from Michigan, and then her counterpart, Alex Straco, who, you know, I saw them a couple years ago somewhere, and Straco is somebody I was like, wow, she's going to be really good. And we've seen Bobian be really good, but she's needed somebody behind her to help give that team some depth. And Michigan isn't a team that scores a lot of runs. So they're going to need those two to have some shutdown innings, have some shutdown games, and really work together for Michigan to have a good chance at contending.
I think an interesting aspect about Minnesota is, like, now that Coach Piper is in charge of the entire team, how does that look? Does it take away from her ability to work more with pitchers? I just think that's an interesting dynamic for Minnesota. So I'd be interested in watching that for sure.
Yeah, I see how that impacts Amber Fizer and that staff for sure. Let's move on to ACC. This is our last Power 5 conference we'll get to today. Teams you expect to contend in the ACC, Amanda?
ACC, Florida State, for sure, undoubtedly. And Virginia Tech did really well last year with Pete DeMore. He had come over and really helped that team get some big wins. So I think of Florida State, they've just been the dominant powerhouse. But I think that Virginia Tech is a team that stands out to me.
Yeah, Virginia Tech, I agree with that 100%, Amanda, because I think that it's Keely Richard. You know, she has put up some big numbers. And if she has a very good year, then they're going to be in the running. And remember, the last couple of years, they've given Florida State a fit. I think Florida State is obviously, in everybody's minds, one of the top teams. But I think that Virginia Tech is going to be a lot of fun to watch. And then I think, North Carolina State has some very good athletes. You've got Duke coming online. Clemson. It's an interesting conference. And I think the one thing that helps them too is as the ACC network really starts to kick in and those teams are more and more on television, kind of like the SEC network did for the SEC, I think we're going to start seeing some more big time recruits show up in the ACC.
Yeah, I think the storyline of the ACC, and having talked to all those coaches and done, the previous, the depth, obviously they're adding, when you add programs like Duke and Clemson had, they've added programs, which is great for women's sports in total the last few years. But the depth of that conference is really starting to get really competitive, which is great to see. I mean, it's really becoming like, where you used to just be able to be like, okay, here's the best two and that's it. And like, you don't have to worry about the other ones. Now it's like, wow, like the middle of it, I was like, there's a lot of talent on these teams, which is, I think, like you said, facilities and investment in the women's sports and the network is all just making that to become more parity in that conference, which is awesome. How about, speaking of that, kind of a potential sleeper team, because this is a conference where I think there could be maybe a sleeper team. You mentioned a few, Michelle, but is there one that you maybe haven't mentioned, or even one of the ones you did, why you think they could be a potential sleeper?
Duke, maybe, with a lot of smart kids, I think Duke and Clemson are teams that they're going to be hungry, they're new programs and they're going to have a lot of firsts, their first possible, win, against Florida State, all those things. I think that those are two teams that you can't count out other than the obvious that we had talked about.
Yeah. Talking to Coach Young at Duke, they had like four players start their own businesses during the quarantine just because like they had time on their hands. She's like, four of them started their own companies. I'm like, yeah, okay, wow. Like that's
awesome. Wow.
I mean, they weren't like multi, it's not like a conglomerate, but it was like, just stuff that was pretty impressive. I was like, yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. How about a player to watch in that conference, Amanda? Who are you maybe interested in seeing?
I am interested to see how Brittany Pickett does from UNC. She is a player who has a ton of potential in the circle and also at the plate. She's a pitcher who hits for herself. And I saw somewhere that Coach Papa was talking about how she's finally healthy. And she's a pitcher who has taken on hundreds upon hundreds of innings for UNC. So the fact that she won't have pitched in a game for about a year, she could be fresh for this last year. I think she's a sixth-year senior too, maybe fifth year. It's one of the two. So she's super experienced. She's strong. She's healthy. And she's the player who seriously can put up big numbers, like really big numbers.
Yeah, she was injured. She only had like two games last year and she had a hand injury. So she missed all of last year, basically. And that's why their record was a lot of why it was, to be honest, because
so it's been like, it's going to be like a year and a half or 2 years, right? For since well, she,
yeah,
no,
she threw
it's
a
still, no, it's still, year. Never mind.
Yeah. But I mean, she literally, it's not just, it's more than the typical, you know, she hadn't pitched. She only pitched in like a few innings last year, and Hannah George had to kind of shoulder the load. How about you, player to watch, Michelle, from that conference?
Sydney Sherrill. I'm interested in seeing how she does, you know, this year. So another one of those kids had a phenomenal freshman year, wins a national championship, target on your back this big. It's the one kid in the lineup that if you strike her out, it's like, you know, opposing pitchers that they're just going right after her. So I think that it will be interesting to see how she does and how she leads Florida State. I think she's a big cog in that wheel.
Best pitcher, Amanda, in the ACC?
Keely Rochard from Virginia Tech. I think she's the one that stands out the most to me. And it was cool because, you know, Carrie Eberle for Oklahoma State, who's there now, she used to pitch at Virginia Tech with Rochard. So you think about those two together. And now that they're on different teams, they've really, I mean, not that they were bad before by any means, but like they've really owned that ace role on, you know, Oklahoma State for Eberle and then Rochard for Virginia Tech pitching a ton of innings. I mean, she threw so much last year for them and she was just a workhorse and did really, really well with wanting the ball every single game. She was going to be the one that got the ball in the big games, no doubt. So seeing how she throws this year.
How about you, Michelle?
I'm going to throw a Florida State kid out, Catherine Sandercock. I think that it will be interesting to see how her year turns out. I think that Florida State is probably going to be more of a staff as they've been in the past, you know, after Megan King or after some of their big aces have moved through. But it is hard to say, well, you know, just because I didn't want to jump on Amanda's back with the, you know, Keely Rochard, I had to come up with another name. So there you go.
You know, Caitlin Arnold was there last year with her. She had a good start as her transfer from Tennessee. So that, like you said, I think that's the staff. Those two together were pretty effective.
For sure.
This is amazing. I mean, I don't think anyone can get anything better anywhere in terms of season previews. But before we let you go, just are there any teams for, or any players or teams from, you know, non-Power Five that we haven't mentioned that you guys really want to get something in about or that you're really interested in seeing how those teams or players do this season? How about you, Michelle? Anyone that outside of the ones we've talked about?
I love Odyssey Alexander from JMU. I think she has just always been great pitcher, great hitter. You can't underestimate her. So, and you know, JMU has just been super strong the last, 10 years. I think Coach Mickey Dean did a great job there, built that program up. There's a lot of pride coming out of the Northeast. I guess you can kind of call their area in the Northeast. So I think that that's a program that you can't really count out. So I'll be looking to watch them.
Yeah, and Louisiana, y'all. I was looking at their roster. Holy cow. It's like you had a feeling it's like they're going to be good, but when you really like kind of just like scroll through their roster and see all their transfers, and not even just transfers, but players like Alyssa Dalton, who's their shortstop, and Caitlin Aldrink, who came over from A&M, up the middle, Jake Cortares, who transferred from Arizona State, who knows who's going to play shortstop for them? They have so many options, but they have so many fifth and sixth year seniors who are legit players, couple of transfers from Georgia. The only question with them is because Megan Kleist didn't come back. So it was Summer and Megan Kleist. And now that Kleist isn't back, who's going to step up behind Summer Ellison? Because they're going to have so much offense. Jerry Glasgow is probably just so happy right now with the way they're going to hit the ball, because they're going to be so hard to stop if they can find somebody to pitch behind her.
Yeah, I think Amanda, you're 100% right, because they're going to be one of those prototypical teams that their offense is going to be their best defense.
So true. Yeah.
Summer Summers, man. Remember, she's married, Amanda. We got the married Summer Summers.
Yeah. Congratulations to Summer.
I really want her to make, I hope she changes it on the jersey. Like, I want that to be, I just want Summer Summers to be something we say all the time. That would be awesome.
Too.
It's great. Hey, man. They didn't want to pitch her too much this fall because they want to get hit in the face because she's got a wedding. So, you know, you can't get in the wedding photos. Can't have a bruise. You can't have a black eye in a wedding photo. So they made sure to make sure that she didn't have that day ruined. So, well, this is awesome. This gets me excited. I mean, are you guys getting all amped now? Like, let's start the games. Like, we still got a week. I can't believe it.
So yeah.
We got some schedules dropping. Little Birdie, we're taping this on a Tuesday. UCLA schedule is supposed to drop today. So let's see if that happens. That's going to be exciting. So, well, you will be on as much as you can be. We know that you guys have tons of other things and things that you do, and other, you know, ESPN has you busy, which is a good thing. And we'll see how that works out in terms of where you go and what you get to do. But as much as you can come on, we would love to have you on the D1 Softball Podcast, because your insight is, there's nobody better in the business. So we always appreciate that you make the time for us.
Thanks, Rain, for having us.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Have a safe trip. If you're traveling safely to the first game, and make sure you let us know on, and we'll make sure to relay it to our podcast guests every week and to all the great listeners out there. So thank you guys for joining us, and have a great season in the booth.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great to hear from both Amanda and Michelle, just loads and loads of knowledge. They've been in the business for so long, and just love to hear their insight and what they have to say heading into season.
Yeah, we could have kept them on for probably another hour talking about this stuff. I really had to streamline it. There's so much that I wanted to, I'm like, nope, I can't ask that, because we'll go on for another half hour. Just a great, great, great conversation, and so much knowledge with those two. And the good thing is they have such history too. So it's not like they're just, you know, all the stuff in the top of their head is stuff that, like, you know, it's institutional knowledge. So I always love having them on, and they're familiar voices. And so we're going to have them back as much as we can. But they gave you some good stuff. So if you really want to be, you know, if you want to up to date on what you should look for, just kind of to know each team when you see them on TV starting pretty soon, this is a good podcast to save and mark and go back to, and you'll get you acquainted with some of the big names and teams to watch.
It for our episode 23. Make sure you go to d1softball.com, subscribe to the site. Like you said, Graham is now with the team, Graham Hayes, and head on over to Facebook, Instagram, and make sure you download the podcast both on the site and on Apple Podcasts. Ree, anything else to add?
Yeah, just I would encourage subscribing. And I know it's a tough time for a lot of people. We've had people kind of, you know, hey, it's behind a paywall. How can we watch? How can we read this? You know, to be honest, that's the only way we can provide the coverage and the content. And so we're so grateful for all our readers. And if we want to keep covering the sport the way it deserves to be covered, we need subscribers. We need people to support softball. We'll do as much as possible as we can and bring you anything you want as readers. Just, it's going to be a whole bunch of fun stuff with the scoreboard we're going to have. We're going to have player pages and player stats coming soon. So any support and subscriptions are great. And we've got a deal right now where you can get a 20% off for some of the subscriptions. So please do that. And we'll, like I said, we'll be here to provide you all the great content you need. So d1softball.com, subscribe there, and make sure you rate and like the podcast too. Share this podcast and, you know, make sure you get it so it comes to you without even having to worry about it. Just subscribe to the podcast and it'll download each week.
All right. Thank you. And that was episode 23 of the D1 Softball Podcast. See you next week.